Welcome to the Golden Age of Comic Books. Hey, Golden Age fans, it's September 12th, 2006, and this is the 44th installment of the Golden Age of Comic Books. This is Bill Jourdain, your host, and I am very glad you're here this week. Boy, we've got a lot to talk about on the Golden Age of Comic Books. Got a new website. We're going to cover some additional facts about Kryptonite that we have talked about in the previous editions of the Golden Age of Comic Books and on the forum. Going to talk about some of the emails we've received, a new DC Archives book. We're going to bring back an old feature that we haven't had in a while on the Golden Age of Comic Books. That's the Market Report. And we're going to talk about Superman in the newspaper, and that's going to be presented by Bruce Rosenberger of Comics Cast, so stay tuned for that. Last but not least, a main feature on the Golden Age of Comic Books for the 44th installment is going to feature the Golden Age Daredevil, a character you might think you're familiar with if you know about the Marvel Comics character Daredevil, but a completely different character that was originated in the Golden Age of Comic Books, so stay tuned for that. All right, well, first of all, let me talk about a new website for the Golden Age of Comic Books, and you can find that website at goldenagecomics.org. You might say, well, wait a minute, that's a website that you've had for quite a long time. Well, I've had that domain for quite a long time, but that website has been static and has had no updates. Really, it was just there almost as a placeholder page, but I went ahead and redid the site a little bit. And it's now a blog through blogger.com. And if you go to goldenagecomics.org, it'll redirect you directly to the Blogger blog that I've created for the Golden Age of Comic Books podcast. And what I hope to do on the blog regarding each and every episode coming up in the future of the Golden Age of Comic Books is to post a little bit more in terms of the detail that you'll find about the show. Hyperlinks to the enhanced version of the podcast, hyperlinks to the MP3 version of the podcast. You'll find there a hyperlink to the Comic Geek Speak forum that discusses that particular podcast. You'll also find links to a variety of other comic book related podcasts. You'll find links to some comic book sites, and you'll find the email address. You'll find a link where you can go to Podcast Alley and place a vote for the Golden Age of Comic Books, and a lot of other features. So I hope you'll enjoy the new and improved website for the Golden Age of Comic Books. I think it'll be really good. I hope the show notes will help us out a little bit more. I know I talk about additional websites from time to time on the show. I don't really link to those at the Libsyn page, but I do link to those in the enhanced version of the podcast. But for those of you who don't have iTunes or don't listen to the enhanced version of the podcast, hopefully this new blog page at goldenagecomics.org will have those links that I talk about during the show so that you can go to those a little more easily. So check out the new website for the Golden Age of Comic Books at goldenagecomics.org. Let me know what you think. Drop me an email about it. Use the link to the forum. You'll find it over on the left side at the top of the page. You'll be able to go directly to the Golden Age Comic Books forum at comicgeekspeak.com. And look at all the topics that we have going on about Golden Age comic books. So again, check it out, and I hope you'll find it better than what we've had before and a whole lot more useful to you. Now, in speaking about the Golden Age of Comic Books forum at comicsgeekspeak.com, I will point out that we've had a pretty good discussion going on over there about Kryptonite and the origin of Kryptonite. As you probably remember, if you listen to the Golden Age of Podcast number 42, where we talked about Golden Age Superman, I spent a little bit of time talking about Kryptonite from the story that appears in Superman number 61, where Superman learns of his identity and his origins from the planet Krypton. There have been a lot of discussions over on the forum about when Kryptonite had its very first appearance, and there have been discussions about Kryptonite first appearing on the radio show, as I talked about in episode 42. Also, there have been discussions about a story that was written by Jerry Siegel for the comic book called The K-Metal from Krypton that was actually never published, at least during the Golden Age of comic books, and other mentions of Kryptonite. Some even talked about the old Superman Krypto ray gun, the toy that was sold in the early days of Superman in the Golden Age of comic books, and that the advertisements for that toy, or actually the box that that toy came in, being the very first mention of kryptonite. And so there are a lot of disagreements, I guess, and discussions about that. But I wanted to point out a really good article on the web about this particular topic written by Bob Rozakis, who, of course, formerly with DC Comics. Bob is known as Bob Ro the Answer Man. And if you go to his website at silverbulletcomics.com/Bob Ro, there was an article that was printed some time ago. I don't know the exact date of the article, but I'll provide a link to it in the show notes on the website. I believe, actually, this article probably was printed on the web in 2000 or 2001. But he does an excellent job of going through the entire history of kryptonite as it appeared in the comics, on the radio, and in other sources during the golden age of comic books. So check out that article. It's Kryptonite Part 1 and Kryptonite Part 2 as it appears at that website that I mentioned for Bob Ro the Answer Man, and you'll find a lot of additional information about kryptonite and its origins during the golden age of comic books. Now, I mentioned a while back that part of the golden age of comic books lore for Superman were the Superman appearances in the newspaper, both in the regular daily strips and in the Sunday funny sections of the newspapers back in the Golden Age. And Bruce Rosenberger of Comics Cast was nice enough to provide a segment for this edition of the Golden Age of Comic Books where he discusses Superman in the newspaper. So, without further ado, here is Bruce Rosenberger from Comics Cast to talk to us about the Superman dailies and the Superman Sunday funnies.
Have you encountered a time-traveling Neanderthal, brick-throwing mice, and a kid in a yellow nightgown? Has your world suddenly gone four-color? Then you've wandered into the funny papers. I'm guessing that most fans of Superman know that Siegel and Shuster spent years trying to sell Superman. Their first attempt was to a small comic book publisher, Humor Publications, in 1933. In this version, the Superman didn't wear his trademark blue, red, and yellow caped costume, but simply ran around in a tank top and slacks. The publisher of Humor Comics, however, got spooked when another comic he'd published didn't do well and backed out on the deal. The story goes that Shuster was so upset, he threw all the original art in the fireplace. After this blow, Siegel shopped around for another artist, but eventually he and Shuster started selling comics to Harry Donenfeld's Detective Comics. But in the late 1930s, comic books were new. Comic strips, however, had been around since the turn of the century. It was there that Siegel and Shuster aimed to sell their Superman comic. They submitted a several-week continuity to the McClure Syndicate. At that time, Sheldon Mayer was a production assistant to M.C. Gaines, who was packaging comics for several publishers and printing them on McClure's presses. Mayer got a look at the strip samples and convinced Gaines that the strip was good. Gaines, in turn, pitched the strip to one of his clients, Harry Donenfeld's Detective Comics, which, coincidentally, Siegel and Shuster were already working for. So the strips were cut up, rearranged, panels dropped, panels added or expanded, and it eventually became the first 13-page story of Superman, which appeared in the June 1938 number one issue of Action Comics. By 1939, even though only 7 issues of Action Comics featuring the new character had seen print, everyone was pretty sure that they had something going on. Ironically, it is the McClure Syndicate which picks up Superman as a new comic strip feature. The daily strip starts on January 6th, and the color Sunday page is added on November 5th, 1939. Within 1 year, the daily strip is in 90 newspapers. At its height, the Superman daily strip will appear in over 300 newspapers, and the Sunday in 90 newspapers, with a combined readership of over 20 million. Paul Cassidy actually produced 149 daily strips from his home in Wisconsin before moving to Cleveland to work in the studio. He joined Wayne Boring in the studio, and they were eventually augmented by Dennis Neville, John Sekela, Ed Dobrotka, and Paul J. Loretta. Leo Nowak took over the art chores in September 1940, and Jack Burnley drew the daily for a good 8 months before moving on to his own comic book character, Starman. Siegel wrote scripts with dialogue, but pretty much trusted his artists to interpret the scripts into comic form. The artists worked as a team to produce the strips, but left the inking on the faces for Joe Shuster to finish. The studio team was turning out 50 comic book pages, as well as 6 dailies and a Sunday per week, each month. It appears that by 1942, Wayne Boring had left the studio and was producing the strip directly for DC Comics. As I mentioned earlier, Jack Burnley worked on the strip both dailies and Sundays in 1942 and 1943, but even those credited to Burnley are showing hints of Boring's unique style, even to my untrained eye. Sources vary as to exactly when the various artists did their stints on the strip, but basically Wayne Boring, with the inking of Stan Kay, is responsible for the dailies from 1943 through the late 40s. Win Mortimer takes over the pencils in approximately 1949 through 1956, and at some point took over inking as well. Stan Kay returned to ink Kurt Swan in 1956, and that team continued on until at least 1960. Boring and Kay are credited with most of the Sundays from the early 40s until the demise of the strip in 1966. Boring gets credit as artist after 1945. As for writers on the strip, Jerry Siegel wrote it until he went into the service in 1943. Whitney Ellsworth wrote stories in the early 40s. Jack Schiff wrote stories from the early 40s, off and on until 1962. Alvin Schwartz wrote stories between 1944 and 1958, and was the sole writer for several years in and around 1950. Bill Finger took over writing in 1959, and wrote the majority of the stories until the end of the strip in 1966. And Jerry Siegel returned to write a few stories in the early 60s. The first week of the strip introduced us to Jor-El and expanded on the previously told in one panel origin of Superman. The early stories seemed rushed, but it wasn't long before he settled into the cadence of a daily strip and started telling heartfelt and socially conscious stories. In the strip, you'll find more mad dictators, mad scientists, and saboteur-type stories than superpowered villains. Although the strip did feature the first story with the bald Lex Luthor, Mr. Mix's Piddlick shows up for the first time in the comic strip as well. One story has Superman saving Santa Claus from the Nazis. As if he isn't having enough trouble with Lois Lane, Lois's preteen fib-telling niece, Susie, figures into quite a few of the stories in the mid to late 1940s. At some point, Clark and Lois become engaged and apparently get married. I've only got story synopsises to work from, but it doesn't look as if they're imaginary stories. Keeping a secret from a wife must have been a real chore. I've seen a few of the strips from the later 1950s, and many of those seem to be more science fiction themed. But alas, I have little information to go on with these. In the 60s, almost all of the stories are adaptations of stories from the comic books. One Sunday page I recall seeing as a child was one involving Laurie Lemuris, the mermaid. And if memory serves me, I think the art was by Wayne Boring. Superman as a comic strip did make a return in 1978. The strip was titled World's Greatest Superheroes, but eventually became just Superman in the years before its demise in 1985. So, where do you go to read the comic strip? Well, DC and Kitchen Sink put out 3 volumes of daily strips and one of Sundays back in 1998. There is also slip-cased hardcover versions. And while they may be technically out of print, a quick look at Amazon turned up new stock as well as used volumes, and judging from the pricing, they're not that rare. Since there have been no new volumes since then, I think that we're safe in assuming no more are in the works, so finding and reading the other 23 years is going to be difficult. Of course, you can keep your eyes out for eBay auctions of daily or Sundays stripped from old newspapers, but I promise they won't be cheap. Library microfilm is another alternative, although, again, copies do get expensive. Or you can research some of the online newspaper files like newspaperarchives.com. They're reasonably priced, and you can get a lot of old comic strips that way. If anyone knows of any other sources, please let me know. Before I go, I'd like to acknowledge my reference sources. James Vance's Introduction to the Superman the Dailies Collections, the Wikipedia page on Superman comic strip, and some of the wonderful links included on that page, particularly one to an episode guide of the Superman strips. And lastly, to David Young, D.D. Degg, and Stephen Rowe for their help. See you next time in the Funny Papers.
All right. Well, thanks to Bruce Rosenberger of Comics Cast for that really fantastic summary of Superman in the newspaper strips, the Sunday Funnies, etc. Really a great summary, a great synopsis of all of those artists and writers who were involved over the years with those strips. I know I learned a lot, and I hope y'all did too. Wanted to mention one thing that Bruce sent to me in an email after forwarding me that segment. And that is that one of the sources he utilized to research these stories about Superman in the newspaper is found at a website called thespeedingbullet.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes at goldenagecomics.org. So you can check out that website as well as an additional resource regarding the Superman newspaper strips that appeared over, as Bruce said, 23 years. Bruce has a wonderful podcast. If you haven't already checked it out, and if you don't listen to it, please check out his podcast. That's Comics Cast. That's Comics with a K and Cast with a K, all one word, comicscast.libsyn.com. A really fantastic podcast, and one that I know if you enjoy the Golden Age of comic books, you will enjoy it as well. So thanks again, Bruce. I really appreciate all the effort you put into that segment for the show today. Now, I also wanted to mention on the show an email that I received. Actually, it was a post at the blog at goldenagecomics.libsyn.com. And the post, it was actually two separate posts by listener Mike Ryan. Mike put a lot of work into these two posts, and they involved his view of the top 52 Golden Age superheroes that appeared in the Golden Age of comic books. And I'm not going to go through this entire list, number 52 all the way down to number 1. It's sort of a reverse countdown. But I will tell you that it's very worthwhile reading. It's more than just a name. It's a little bit of detail about each of the characters and why Mike believes that they are the top 52 Golden Age superheroes. Now, I took this post and I recreated it at the forum, the Golden Age comic book forum at comicsgeekspeak.com. So check out the forum. You'll find that topic posted there on the forum, and you can read Mike's top 52 Golden Age superheroes. But it's really worthwhile reading, and again, I want to thank Mike for a fine job and a good effort in putting together such a detailed list of his view of the top 52 Golden Age superheroes. Now, I also wanted to mention, I'm always excited when a new Masterworks or Archives comes out featuring Golden Age material. And this past week, I got my copy of the Shazam Family Archives, Volume 1, published by DC. I haven't cracked this book open yet, I hate to say. I wish that I had read it all by now so I could talk more about it. But it looks like a really great resource for some of the Captain Marvel Jr. stories and Mary Marvel stories. A lot of good material reprinted in here, probably a lot of which has never been reprinted before. But in this book, you'll find reprinted The Adventures of Captain Marvel Jr. from Master Comics 23 through 32, Captain Marvel Jr. number 1, and the origin story of Mary Marvel from Captain Marvel Adventures number 18. Now, if you go back and listen to our podcast where we talked all about Captain Marvel and the Marvel family, you'll hear a lot about the stories that appeared, the crossover stories that appeared in Master Comics 23. Go back and check out that podcast where the origin of Captain Marvel Jr. was told, with crossovers with Bullet Man and Captain Marvel, the creation of Captain Nazi. Really a wonderful and one of the greatest crossover stories of the Golden Age of comics probably that was ever done. So check out that podcast, and check out these stories. I think you'll find them really good reading and classic Golden Age material. Now, I have not, in quite a long time, gone through some of the sales of Golden Age comics that have occurred over the last several weeks I had gotten an email from some folks a long time ago telling me that the market report was something that they really weren't interested in hearing, that they preferred I stick solely to talking about Golden Age characters or writers or artists and that kind of thing. But recently, there was a resurgence of emails in both my inbox and on the forum with some folks saying, hey, you know, we'd like to hear the market report again. Whatever happened to that? And so I did a little poll on the forum, and for the most part, everybody said, yeah, do that. Keep it down to a few minutes, but let's do another market report. So I'm going to delve into another market report on this episode of the Golden Age of Comic Books. Again, I haven't done it in a while, but I thought it was worthwhile looking at some of the sales that have occurred on auction sites or on eBay or what have you over the last several weeks and reporting on them here on the Golden Age of Comic Books. So bear with me for a few minutes. If you're listening with the Enhanced podcast, hopefully there'll be a chapter marker here so you can just skip right over the market report if you don't want to hear it. And maybe you'll learn a little bit about what kind of sales can be generated from classic Golden Age comic books. Now, to get this week's market report, I went to the Heritage Auction Gallery website at heritageauctiongallery.com. And I checked out a very recent auction that they had with some really classic examples of near mint and mint Golden Age comic books. A lot of Mile High books were sold, and a lot of other high grade books were sold, Golden Age books, during this auction that ended on September 7th, 2006. Now, a lot of these books, and in fact, most of these books that I'm going to be reporting on, were from the John McLaughlin collection. Apparently, and I don't really know much about this collection, but apparently the McLaughlin collection was considered the largest single collection of Mile High comics that still existed after the books were bought by Chuck Rosansky of Mile High Comics and then resold out into the collector's market. Apparently McLaughlin purchased many of these Mile High books. I don't know if they were purchased directly from Mile High Comics or purchased from other dealers or other individuals after they were sold originally, but apparently McLaughlin had amassed quite a number of Mile High comics in his collection, and from what I read on the Heritage Auction website, he liked to collect runs of comics, so there were a lot of runs of Mile High comics in order from various titles, not Action Comics or Detective Comics or Batman or Superman comics, some of the big dollar books, but certainly some interesting Golden Age books, nevertheless. So a lot of what you're going to hear about on this issue of the market report for the 44th Golden Age of Comic Books podcast deals with the John McLaughlin collection that was recently sold on September 7th at Heritage Comics. So the first one that I noticed that caught my eye was a copy of All Top Comics number 12. That was a very fine near mint 9.0 copy, again a Mile High copy. It sold for $1,912. That was an early jungle comic themed book. Another issue that was sold was America's Greatest Comics number 5. That's a Captain Marvel cover in very fine condition, $1,135.25. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast this evening that I was going to spend some time today talking about the Golden Age Daredevil. And as I went through this auction site and the results from this auction, I couldn't help but notice that some copies of Crime Does Not Pay were sold, some extremely high-grade copies, mile-high copies of Crime Does Not Pay, probably the highest-graded copies of these books that exist. Why is that significant when we're going to talk about the Golden Age Daredevil? Well, Lev Gleason was the publisher of Silver Street Comics, and I'm going to talk about that in some depth in a little while, where Daredevil got his start. Well, Silver Street became Crime Does Not Pay with number 22. And why is that book significant? There sure were a whole host of crime comics that came out during the middle to late 1940s. Well, Crime Does Not Pay is important because it is the very first crime comic book that was ever printed. And the mile-high copy of Crime Does Not Pay number 22, which was essentially Crime Does Not Pay number one. It's the first issue of Crime Does Not Pay Comics after the title was changed from Silver Streak. Was sold in near mint for $11,950. That was a 1942 issue of Crime Does Not Pay number 22. So that is a key book and a key issue and probably the granddaddy of the crime comic books that were published. And that's a pretty whopping price, $11,950 for that Mile High copy. The next issue of Crimes Does Not Pay, that was number 23, sold in very fine near mint for $2,987.50. An amazing aspect of this auction, though, was that there was almost a complete run of Crime Does Not Pay from the Mile High collection that was sold at this auction, starting with issue 22, as I mentioned, and going through number 35, and then there were several other issues of Crime Does Not Pay from the Mile High collection all the way through issue number 51. So I thought that was a very, very significant sale of Golden Age comic books over the last couple of weeks. Now, there was another book that sold. This was not a Mile High book, but a key book, and once again, one we're going to be talking about when we talk about the Golden Age Daredevil in a few minutes. And that was a book called Daredevil Battles Hitler. That's really Daredevil number one. And this book was restored, not the Mile High copy, but it was a very fine plus, 8.5 CGC graded book. It sold for $4,780. There was also a copy of Daredevil number 17, 1943 issue, very fine near mint 9.0, that sold for $1,673. Now, of course, one book that caught my eye in this auction, and this book always catches my eye because I'd love to have one. And if y'all have an extra one sitting around, just send it my way. And that, of course, is Detective Comics number 27, the first appearance of Batman. And they had on this auction an apparent VG copy, that means it was restored, a very good copy of Detective Comics number 27. What was interesting about this particular issue of Detective 27, though, is that, of course, as a lot of you know, Detective Comics didn't just feature Batman. It featured Slam Bradley and a character called the Spy. And in this particular copy of Detective Comics number 27, Joe Shuster, of course, of Superman fame, as we heard about earlier in Bruce's segment, autographed the Slam Bradley story and the Spy story in this particular issue of Detective Comics number 27. So I thought that was very significant, that not only is this the first appearance of Batman to the world, but it also contained a Joe Shuster autograph on the stories of Slam Bradley and the Spy, of course, that Siegel and Shuster were responsible for in this particular comic. That book sold for $35,850, a whopping sum, to say the least. There were some other notable sales during this auction, a copy of Dollman Quarterly number 2, published by Quality Comics in 1942. That was the Mile High issue of that book. That was a very fine near mint copy, $2,868. Once again, as was the case with Crime Does Not Pay, there was a very, very long run of Dollman Quarterly issues and all Mile High books contained in this auction. Not a complete unbroken run, but a run starting with issue number 2 and going all the way through issue number 40 of that particular title. There was a Fawcett book from 1943, Don Winslow of the Navy. That was a book that appeared for quite a long time for Fawcett. Issue number 1, the Mile High copy, which also features Captain Marvel on the cover, sold for $3,883.75. Now, if you've listened to all of the previous editions of the Golden Age of comic books, you'll recall that I talked about Firehair that was published by Fiction House back in 1948. Well, lo and behold, the Mile High copy of Firehair number 1, near mint plus, 9.6, that's just a super high grade copy of that book, sold for $1,673. So I didn't think I'd find a copy of Firehair, and in particular the Mile High copy of Firehair, for this market report, but lo and behold, there it was. There were some early four-color issues that sold. The earliest one that I saw was four-color number 4. That's a Smilin' Jack newspaper reprint issue from 1942, very fine, near mint, sold for $1,135.25. I saw a Dell file copy, which of course are some of the nicest copies of Dells that exist, a four color number 386. That's also known to collectors as Uncle Scrooge number one, the first cover appearance of Uncle Scrooge in the story Only a Poor Old Man. That was graded CGC Near Mint 9.2, and it sold for a pretty big sum, $11,950. Almost done now, there was a copy of Jungle Comics number 1 from Fiction House from 1940, a very fine Near Mint 9.0 copy. This was not the Mile High copy. It sold for $5,978. The last book I'm going to comment on during the market report is a copy of Marvel Mystery Comics, but this was not one of the normal run that you would find of Marvel Mystery Comics. This was a copy of a Marvel Mystery Comics 132-page edition that's listed in the price guide, the Overstreet price guide. It was published in 1943 and is considered rare. It has blank inside covers and a blank back cover. And what's interesting about this particular issue of this book that was sold by Heritage in its September 7th auction. By the way, this book had a 25-cent cover price in 1943, so it was a lot larger than the normal books. But what was interesting is they called this book a variant of the rare book. So this wasn't the rare book that they talk about in the price guide. This is actually a variant of that. And the reason it was a variant is it did not contain the stories that were printed in the original rare issue. This particular book reprints stories from Captain America Comics number 22 and Marvel Mystery Comics number 41. The cover is from Marvel Mystery Comics number 33. And this book, being a very rare, extremely rare apparently, book and a variant at that, in VG Plus condition, sold for $28,680. So a real big sale there for a book that most of us will probably never see. So that concludes the market report for episode 44 of the Golden Age of Comic Books. Once again, I hope you've enjoyed the market report. If you have comments one way or the other about whether you want to have a market report or not, let me know. You can go to the post that we've already started at the Golden Age of Comic Books forum, or you can drop me a private email at goldenagecomics@gmail.com and let me know. But I'll continue to do it, and I'll probably list this information that I've talked about on the blog page as part of the show notes for this episode of the Golden Age of Comic Books. All right, well, let's change the focus a little now and talk about the main topic of the Golden Age of Comic Books for today, and that is the Golden Age Daredevil. Who is he, and where did he get his start in the Golden Age of Comic Books? Well, before I talk about the Golden Age Daredevil, let me talk about his chief nemesis during the Golden Age of Comic Books. Now, why would I talk about the chief nemesis or the arch villain of a Golden Age superhero before I talked about the superhero? Well, in this case, the chief nemesis or the chief villain who appeared in the life of Daredevil actually appeared before Daredevil, and that villain was called the Claw, the world's worst villain, and he made his first appearance in Silver Streak Comics number 1. That was the December 1939 issue. I can't think of an uglier supervillain than the Claw. If you look at the cover to Silver Streak Comics number 1 or any of the other cover appearances that the Claw made, in particular number 6 is a pretty grotesque cover image of the Claw. He is a yellow, demonic looking creature with big fangs and big claws. He grew to giant proportions. He just towered over everyone else and had all kinds of evil powers that he used to subdue his foes and commit crime on a worldwide scale. Really one of the worst villains, as they said, that existed during the Golden Age of comic books. So the Claw made his start in Silver Streak Comics number 1. He lived in a skull-shaped castle halfway around the world, somewhere in the vicinity of Tibet, and he had all kinds of worshipers who served him. He was known to them as the god of hate. He was Oriental in caricature, and really, I think his ultimate goal was to wage war on America. This was, of course, before America entered into World War II. And the Claw headline, Silver Street Comics, numbers 1 and 2, and he was making his plans to invade America. Then he disappeared until issue number 6. There's no sign of the Claw in Silver Street Comics 3, 4, and 5. And then with Silver Streak Comics number 6, the Claw returns. Well, not only does the Claw return in that particular issue of Silver Streak Comics, but Daredevil makes his first appearance in that issue of Silver Streak Comics. And issue number 6 was dated September 1940. In that issue, the Golden Age Daredevil had a blue and yellow costume and fought the Claw in that issue. This issue was drawn by Jack Binder. But the real important issue with Daredevil, I think, is his appearance in the next issue of Silver Street Comics. But before we talk about that, let me talk a little bit about the first told origin of Daredevil as it appeared in Silver Street Comics number 6. Daredevil was a man named Bart Hill, and unlike the Marvel Comics version of Daredevil that appeared in the Silver Age of comics, he had his eyesight and did not have heightened senses like the Matt Murdock Daredevil did. But he was, as told in this particular issue of Silver Streak number 6, he had endured a very terrible event in his lifetime when his father was murdered by gangsters, and as a young boy he was tortured by those gangsters. In fact, he was tortured and there was a brand left on his chest in the shape of a boomerang. And that becomes important to Daredevil and his origin later on. And then as his life moved forward, he vowed to fight crime as similar to the Batman character, the Bruce Wayne character. And he adopted the guise of Daredevil in his costume that I mentioned, that started out a blue and yellow costume and actually changed to a blue and red costume. A really interesting costume if you look at the covers of Daredevil that are featured in the enhanced version of the podcast or on the website. You'll see that he's half and half, blue on one side and red on the other. He has a yellow spiked belt that I would imagine could have been very uncomfortable to him under certain circumstances. And his weapon of choice, other than being physically fit and a fighter, his weapon of choice was a boomerang, the same shape that had been branded into his chest when he was a boy by the gangsters. And he is quite adept at throwing the boomerang and using it to fight crime. And so in issue number 6, he fights the Claw. But then, as I mentioned, in issue number 7 of Silver Street Comics, you have the real big battle between the Claw and Daredevil. And in that issue, the Claw finally gets around to invading America. And in fact, the Claw has all kinds of insidious devices that he uses to wage crime and wage war on his enemies. And he has a large boring machine, kind of like the Mole Man used, if you're familiar with his stories in Fantastic Four. And he bores a tunnel all the way from his Skull Castle stronghold in the mountains of Tibet all the way under the sea to the United States. And lo and behold, his tunnel comes up under New York City. And as the Claw begins his invasion of New York City, all of his many minions, his army of evil, if you will, come up through the tunnel that has been bored by this large machine of his, and they place a large generator under New York City, a generator of the Claw's design. And the generator allows the Claw to utilize his powers. Of course, as I mentioned, he was a giant. He just towered over the entire city of New York, taller than any of the buildings. and strange electrical rays emanated from his claws on his fingers, as powered by the generator that had been placed under the city. Kind of a strange story, but this is how it all began. And believe it or not, in that story, the claw is successful in devastating New York City. All the buildings are crushed and destroyed by the claw. Daredevil, who is seemingly a spoiled playboy in the guise of Bart Hill, is actually out with his girlfriend and sees the invasion begin. He puts on his Daredevil costume and rushes to the scene. And through a number of very colorful and sometimes very bloody fight scenes, the Daredevil engages the Claw in battle, using his boomerang to put out the right eye of the Claw, and they fight to a standstill. In fact, the battle rages so much that Daredevil begins to use dynamite. He puts dynamite under the shoe of the Claw to give him a hot foot, and of course blows up the dynamite and topples the Claw over. And finally, the Claw grabs Daredevil and swallows him whole. And as Daredevil is down in the throat of the Claw, he decides he better use some more dynamite, so he tosses a couple of sticks of dynamite down into the Claw's stomach, and as they explode, Daredevil is expelled from the Claw. And as he is on the ground, and it appears that the Claw may be mortally wounded, and Daredevil is preparing to approach the Claw and give him the killing blow that will hopefully get rid of the Claw for good, the Claw disappears in a cloud of smoke, not to be seen again in that issue of Silver Streak Comics. Now, that wasn't the end of the Claw, as is the case with most really good supervillains. They kind of hang around and continue to fight the superheroes as the chief antagonist of those superheroes, and the Claw did return in Silver Streak Comics 8, 9, and 10 and continued the battle with Daredevil. Now, what's notable about the stories involving the battles between Daredevil and the Claw in Silver Streak 7, 8, 9, and 10 is the fact that all of these stories were drawn by Jack Cole. Of course, Jack Cole went on to become famous for his creation of Plastic Man for Police Comics, and as they say, the rest is history there. But Cole rendered the Daredevil Claw fight scenes that took place in the pages of Silver Streak 7, 8, 9, and 10. Issue number 7 was the January 1941 issue. Number 8 was the March 1941 issue. 9 was the April 41 issue. And 10 was the May 1941 issue. The origin of the Claw was told much later in Daredevil Comics number 12. That was the August 1942 issue. Now, Daredevil hung around in Silver Streak Comics until issue number 17. That was the December 1941 issue. And then, as I mentioned during the market report, the title of that comic, Silver Streak Comics, changed to Crime Does Not Pay with issue number 22. That was in June of 1942. And as I mentioned, that was the very first crime comic that was ever created. And of course, it set off a huge amount of crime comics that continued on throughout the 1940s and early 1950s, which generated much concern over the comics and, of course, congressional investigations and the Frederick Wortham book and many, many other issues. Now, Daredevil wasn't limited to only appearing in Silver Streak Comics, and in July of 1941, he obtained his own book. Now, the name of that comic was eventually Daredevil Comics, but the very first issue, number 1, was called Daredevil Battles Hitler. And if any of you have ever looked at covers of famous Golden Age comics, I'm sure that you have seen a copy of the cover of Daredevil Battles Hitler. It's a very well-known cover featuring an inset of the Claw in the bottom right corner, a picture of Daredevil fighting on the right side of the cover, and other characters in the book. And of course, a huge picture of Adolf Hitler where his eyes have actually been colored in to look more sinister, but it's actually a photograph of his face with his eyes colored in. One of the most recognizable, probably, of the Golden Age comic book covers from the Golden Age of comic books. Now, what's interesting about Daredevil Battles Hitler, Daredevil Comics number one, this book was produced completely by Charles Bureau. Bureau, of course, worked with Lev Gleason, and ultimately it was Bureau who took Silver Streak into the crime comic realm. But the interesting story about this particular book is twofold. First of all, in Daredevil Battles Hitler, it's a full-length story. In other words, the entire comic, issue number one, is filled with this battle. And it's not just Daredevil that battles Hitler in this particular title. It's actually all of the Lev Gleason characters appearing in the book, Silver Streak, Lance Hale, Cloud Curtis, Dickie Dean, and Daredevil, to battle Hitler in this book. And of course, Hitler teamed up with none other than the Claw in this book. And it wasn't until Daredevil convinced the Claw in this issue that Hitler was going to turn against him that the Claw assisted in a way and allowed the Hitler to be defeated in this book. Of course, this was several months before the United States entered into World War II, but I think it was certainly a foreshadowing of things to come, that the United States ultimately would become involved in the war against Hitler and his regime in Europe. Another interesting story about Daredevil Battles Hitler is recounted in the book that I've talked about on several occasions in the podcast, and that's the book Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and the Birth of the Comic Book by Gerard Jones. If you haven't picked up a copy of this book, it's certainly worth reading if you're interested in the history of the publishing of comic books during the Golden Age. But what I want to mention is this book, Daredevil Battles Hitler, is mentioned in the Jones Men of Tomorrow book at page 188 and 189. And what's interesting is they talk about how this particular comic book was created. And as it turns out, the publisher, Lev Gleason, had gotten his hands on several million pages of pulp paper and was able to convert those into comics. The problem was the money that he needed to do that would not be extended to him by the distributor unless he was able to produce a comic book within essentially a few days. This all happened on a Friday, and Gleason needed this book to be ready to be printed by Monday. And so he got together with Charles Bureau, and they assembled a team of artists and writers to put this book together over one weekend. And as the story is told and recounted by Gerard Jones in his book, the artists who got together were some of the notables of the time. Bureau, of course, and his friend Bob Wood. You had the star artist on the Batman strip, Jerry Robinson, who came in to work on that book that weekend. Wood had his brothers Dick and Dave come in to help. Of course, you had Bernie Klein, Mort Meskin, and you had George Russo. So again, all who were Batman ghosts for Bob Kane during that time. And they began working on putting this comic book together on a Friday night, smoking and drinking coffee and carrying on. And lo and behold, as they worked feverishly to get this book going, a blizzard hit in the middle of the weekend, and they had no food and they had nothing to drink, and so they sent one of their number, Klein, out to look for food, and he was gone apparently for many, many hours, and when he finally returned, all he could find in the blizzard-covered streets of Manhattan were some eggs and some milk, and of course they were in a room with no kitchen. They had no way to cook the eggs, and so their solution to that was to pry tiles off of the walls of the bathroom, and they lit a fire in the bathroom, I guess, and they actually cooked eggs on the tiles and ate those eggs to keep going. But they worked long and hard all throughout the weekend, and by Monday morning, this entire book, Daredevil Battles Hitler, was ready to be printed. And so that is the story as recounted by Gerard Jones in his book Men of Tomorrow about how Daredevil Comics number one, also known as Daredevil Battles Hitler, was created. Interestingly also, this story was used by Michael Chabon in his book The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which many of you might be familiar with as It recounts fictionally the creation of the character known as the Escapist, but Chabon used this particular story that Jones tells in his book as a sequence of events that occurred in the life of the main characters, Cavalier and Clay, in that book. So if you ever read that book, what I just told you about might sound familiar from the fictional account as told in The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. A lot of trivia there, but very interesting in terms of how Daredevil Battles Hitler came into being. So as time went on, the Daredevil comic book continued to be published, and some notable things occurred in the life of Daredevil Bart Hill in the pages of that book. Most notably, in issue number 13, supporting cast were introduced, the sidekicks, if you will, for Daredevil who would actually survive him in the comic book, and that was a group of kids called the Little Wise Guys. Daredevil number 13 was the October 1942 issue, and the Little Wise Guys were called Scarecrow, Pee-wee, Jock, Curly, and Meatball, and unfortunately, 2 issues later, in issue number 15, the character known as Meatball was killed off in the adventure in that particular book. But the Little Wise Guys were similar in a way to the Newsboy Legion that we've talked about before, and they assisted Daredevil in his adventures in fighting crime in the pages of Daredevil comics. Now, as time went by, Biro became the primary artist and writer and editor of the Daredevil stories that appeared in the pages of Daredevil comics. And with issue number 18, that was the August 1943 issue, Biro completely revamped and retold the origin of Daredevil. And in this origin story, there was no group of gangsters who killed the father of Bart Hill and tortured the young boy and branded him with a boomerang on his chest. Instead, Bart Hill was raised as an orphan by a tribe of Aborigines who taught him as a young man how to use a boomerang and master the skills of throwing and using the boomerang as a weapon, and allowed him to hone his skills as someone who could use a boomerang to fight crime and his physical skills as a fighter in order to fight crime in that particular story. So with the publication of Daredevil number 18, there was a whole new origin told, which became the origin of Daredevil from that point forward. Now, in the pages of Daredevil comics at this time, the character, the Claw, that we've talked about, continued to appear, but not in the Daredevil stories. He was actually appearing in other stories of backup characters in the comic. But in Daredevil comics number 31, that was the July 1945 issue, the Claw finally met his demise. And in fact, the cover of that particular comic actually announces that the Claw would end and die in that issue, and it invited the readers to read the story about how the Claw would finally meet his maker. And in that story, the Claw was actually killed by a electric ray, a contraption of the Claw's own making that ultimately kills him in that issue. So in July of 1945, with Daredevil number 31, the Claw is no more. Daredevil continued in his adventures throughout the rest of the 1940s, and as was so true with so many superheroes, with the end of World War II and the fighting of the Japanese, the Nazis, and other enemies of the United States, there weren't really any great stories to tell. There were no spies and saboteurs for the superheroes to go out and conquer and defeat, and so the Daredevil stories began to become more and more filled with the adventures of the Little Wise Guys. And with issue number 69, that was the December 1950 issue, the Daredevil is put completely out to pasture in his own title, and the title is taken over by the Little Wise Guys completely. And Daredevil does not make any further appearances in Daredevil comics after issue number 69, and the Little Wise Guys are completely in charge of that book after that, except for 2 appearances of Daredevil, first in issue number 79, that was the October 1951 issue, and number 80, the November 1951 issue, where the Daredevil comes back and makes an appearance with the Little Wise Guys. Daredevil comics actually continued on all the way until issue number 134. That was the September 1956 issue. Interestingly, that was also the same month and year that the Silver Age of comics began, with the publication of Showcase number 4 and the first appearance of the Silver Age Flash by DC Comics. Well, I think it's fair to say that the Daredevil from the Golden Age of comics probably in some ways inspired Marvel to create the Daredevil of the Silver Age of comics, the blind attorney Matt Murdock. And although there were not a lot of similarities between the two, other than the name, the costume that the original Silver Age Daredevil wore was the two-color costume like the Golden Age Daredevil wore, and probably inspired by that. Other than that, there really weren't any similarities between the two, and I think that the Golden Age Daredevil really faded off into obscurity way back in the Golden Age of comics. Now, if you want to go out and find copies of Golden Age Daredevil stories to read, where do you go? Well, there are not a lot of sources out there, unfortunately. I know that you can go to electrocomics.com, one of the online sources, and you can actually purchase and download a digital copy of Silver Streak number 7, where you can read that classic story of the encounter between the Golden Age Daredevil and the Claw. I'm not familiar with a lot of other reprint sources. I know AC Comics at accomics.com has reprinted some of the Daredevil stories in its publications over the years. But as far as a reprint source with chronological reprints of Daredevil stories or a large volume of reprints of Daredevil stories, I'm not aware of any. If any of the listeners of the Golden Age of comic books are aware of that, please let me know. I'd like to follow up and provide that information so that the listeners can go out and find reprints, if possible, of these particular Golden Age stories about Daredevil. Otherwise, I'm afraid you're going to have to go out and purchase original copies of Silver Streak comics or of Daredevil comics to read those Golden Age Daredevil stories. Well, I hope you've enjoyed learning a little bit about the Golden Age Daredevil, truly a unique character from the Golden Age of comic books, one of the most recognized covers on the first issue of his own magazine, Daredevil Battles Hitler, and one of the most enduring magazines throughout the Golden Age of comics, right up to the start of the Silver Age of comic books. All right, well, that's going to do it for the 44th installment of the Golden Age of comic books for September 12th, 2006. I tell you what, I'm looking down at the time, and we've gone almost an hour on this episode, a whole lot longer than we normally go, and probably the longest episode of the Golden Age of comic books that I've ever produced. But I think it's been one chock full of good information. A lot of good stuff at the beginning about Kryptonite, about the Captain Marvel family archives, or actually the Marvel family archives. A lot of good information in the market report. And for me, the highlight of the show, of course, was Bruce Rosenberger's segment about the Superman newspaper strips. And once again, thanks, Bruce, for that great segment. And if you have questions about Daredevil or any of the information that you heard on this issue of the Golden Age of comic books, please don't forget to use our email address. That's goldenagecomics@gmail.com. I enjoy all the emails that I get, and certainly I do my very best to respond to the emails that I receive. Don't forget about our new website that I talked about at the beginning of the show, goldenagecomics.org. I think the new website will hopefully provide a little more information about the details that we discuss in each episode of Golden Age of comic books. It'll give you links to a lot of the websites and other information we talk about. Certainly, it'll provide you a direct link to the Golden Age of comic book forum at comicgeekspeak.com. Also, in the show notes, there'll be a link directly to the topic of this particular podcast. In other words, if you go to the forum at Golden Age comic book forum at comicgeekspeak.com, you'll find a topic about episode 44, and you'll be able to post comments there about this show. In fact, that's where I would prefer everyone who has comments to make about the topics covered on this show. Go to the forum and post your comments there for everyone to see. And I think some of the other episodes we've talked about on the forum have generated a lot of really good comments and a lot of really good discussions, including some side discussions about other issues So I think you'll enjoy that. So check that out and use that link. Don't forget to support the Grand Comic Book Database Project at comics.org. There's a link to the Grand Comic Book Database Project on our new website. Check them out. All the covers are there. All the information about writers and artists are contained in that particular website, and they continue in their efforts to catalog all of the comic books that have been created from the beginning of the Golden Age of comic books through the modern age. Don't forget to support the Actor Comic Fund at actorcomicfund.org. I tell you what, it's been over an hour and I'm having trouble getting my words out. And I wanted to point out that the Actor Comic Fund is now called the Heroes Initiative. I received a press release from Actor that they had changed their name and that they are going to change their website. And so you can go to the new website. I believe it's heroesinitiative.org. It's still available through actorcomicfund.org, and you can check out their new name. The mission remains the same, to provide assistance to creators of comics who can't otherwise provide assistance for themselves, and they continue on in what I consider to be a very worthwhile effort. So check out the Heroes Initiative. And last but not least, don't forget to place a vote for the Golden Age of Comic Books podcast at Podcast Alley. On the bottom left of the new website, you'll find a link there where you can click and it'll go right to the vote page. So check that out. And I would appreciate each and every vote that you are willing to give to the Golden Age of Comic Books at Podcast Alley. Well, have a great week, everybody. Get out there and find some Golden Age reprints to read. Go out and pick up a copy of The Shazam Family and read those adventures of Captain Marvel Jr. I think you'll find them very, very worthwhile reading. So thanks again for joining us, and I look forward to talking to each and every one of you about the Golden Age of comic books on our next episode.